Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
In the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast returns with Kyle Devitt. As always, I am Terry Foy, and we are looking back on a crazy weekend in MLL action, headlined by a season-saving overtime game-winning goal from the Boston Cannons. Kyle, is that too strong of a statement?
I don't believe it is. No, it was quite spectacular. Quite a great game, actually. Probably the best game of the season so far.
And you were on hand to take it all in. The BayHawks came in, you know, consensus top team in the Inside Lacrosse MLL power rankings. But, you know, it doesn't really tell the half of it, because the fact of the matter was that, you know, last week, I think maybe it was 2 weeks ago, headlined the podcast, BayHawks beatable, ? Primarily because, you know, I think we both decided or thought that they were so versatile, so capable, you know, that they were, and that they had so many areas in which they could get even better, that they, you know, ultimately what I'm trying to say is this is a nice win for the Cannons. They had their backs against the wall against a very good team. Exactly how much stock do you put into to this overtime win over the BayHawks?
Well, like, these teams hate each other. That was pretty obvious by watching the game. It's a lot of penalties, a lot of chippiness, a lot of, you know, at one point, and even players that were uncharacteristically chippy, like Kyle Dixon smashed John Hayes in the face off ball because he thought Hayes was too close to him at the top of the 2-point line and got a penalty for illegal body check. I mean, that's not a characteristic move from Kyle Dixon. That's not, people say all the time he's not that kind of player, but, you know, you're in the heat of the moment. Anybody can be that kind of player. So, I think the emotion ran high and, you know, I think the BayHawks emotion that they usually play with swallowed them whole and it got the better of them. And that's how Boston won. That's what Boston wanted to do. That's what Boston did. And, you know, it was a great game. Fourth quarter was really not a lot of goal scoring, but, great up and down action, great performance by the goalies, both goalies, Turner and Gable. But overall, really great contest. Definitely season saving for the Cannons.
Just two more quick things on this, looking at the box score that jump out to me. Well, I guess Paul Rabel's 7 points jumps out, but, you know, it's not hugely par for the court, or, you know, hugely out of the norm. Ryan Boyle, a little bit of a return to form with 5 points after, you know, kind of struggling at the early season. Mike Stone with 4 points. You know, we had talked about how the Cannons needed more midfield production, so I'm sure that was good to see. But the thing that stood out to me the most, the two things that stood out to me the most, John Grant Jr., 5-1, although, you know, speaking with him yesterday, he made a comment about, you know, being a little bit haunted by just missing on a potential overtime game winner for the BayHawks before the Cannons turned around and scored theirs. And then on the other side, Chris Seck going 20-for-30 against Adam Rand, a little bit of you know, picking up 10 ground balls, a little bit of a bounce back game, it seems. What were your two impressions of those two performances, Grant and X?
John Grant Jr., you know, I don't think that kind of John Grant Jr. Can show up every game now. I think the age and the wear and tear has caught up with him a little bit. I mean, he's obviously still capable of doing it because he just did it. But, you know, it's never surprising when Jr. goes for six. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I actually didn't think it was as surprising as Boyle going for five, because Boyle's had a real tough start, beginning the season. Eck, it was just a matter of time for Eck. He'd faced some seriously great units, not just individual guys. And, he finally got the best of him, and his unit played better than it had in any of the other three games. So you gotta give credit to those guys. I mean, he had 10 ground balls himself, but, you know, other guys on the wings, Smalley had 7, probably the best game Smalley played all year. Easily, by the way. And you have a bunch of other guys, you know, trying to contribute and doing well for him in the break and allowing them to keep possession.
Well, you know, no question, it's a big win. But in the interest of time, the MLL has taken a week off, more or less, this week as the NCAA championship takes center stage. We'll move on. And essentially, when you look around the results of the rest of the league, I'm curious as to what to you was the most significant. We'll move to that game next. I'm going to give you basically a choice of all three, though, because I think that, you know, New York putting up 14 on Ohio, probably the least significant result, you know, coming away with a 6-goal win there. Denver putting 20 on Rochester, you know, The only thing that stands out to me about that is how many goals they scored. And then Hamilton beating Chesapeake 16-15 in overtime. I'm sorry, Charlotte. Charlotte keeping it that close with a Hamilton team that was probably a little bit stronger offensively, although I'm interested in your points on that, a little bit stronger in terms of their personnel than they have been all season. Which of those, kind of results impressed or surprised you the most?
I really did enjoy the Denver-Rochester game, and not to watch Rochester get beat down, but there was a lot of intricacies in how Denver plays and little things that they do that other teams don't do that I liked. But obviously the most important one is Hamilton-Charlotte, and it was probably one of the – I mean, was it a best game? I would say that the Boston-Chesapeake game was better because it was more back and forth. But there was a lot of comebacks in this game. Hamilton coming back into it, Charlotte scoring two goals in the fourth quarter to tie it up, to bring it to overtime. Mike Sawyer making his debut. There's a lot of storylines here. I think the best sign for them is Tim Fallon went 18 for 34. Yes, he lost the last faceoff. Yes, the other faceoff guy, Matt Delente, scored on him, his team, and they lost. But he had, his best game of the season, 12 ground balls, 18 for 34. Not so shabby. I think the Hounds were really shorthanded and still put up a really nice fight. Hamilton looked lethargic in the third quarter. Looked really, they scored four goals, but they looked bad scoring four goals, if that's possible. Charlotte relying on ball movement a little bit, which was surprising because they didn't have their regular distributor, Janowski. Poyon did play in the game, had a great game, and, I'm interested to get his take on the entire experience as well.
Well, as you just kind of suggested, we're going to be bringing in Pete in a couple minutes. So let's move on from this one and talk about the other two games of the weekend. Like I said, the New York Lizards beating the Ohio Machine 14-8, and it'll be the last time the Ohio Machine looked like they did in that loss. What did you take away from this one?
Not much. Ohio looked bad. I mean, I actually went back through and looked at some stats. Ohio has 7 assisted goals in the season. 7 in 3 games. That's not good. A lot of unassisted goals means a lot of guys calling their number and going to the cage. And that's not going to win you games. And they haven't won games. They're 0-3. And they're playing a hot Hamilton team actually tonight. We're taping this on Thursday. That could really put them in a bad spot. But again, they have new rookies coming in. Marcus Holman, Logan Schuss. I really like Dominique Alexander as a player. I think he could, his game translates to the MLL really well. Big physical player, strong, can shoot the rock, play defense. So I think the future is bright for them, but the future did not look very bright in this game when New York was taking it to them.
What about the Lizards? I mean, Granley in 17-26, he continues to look like, is it fair to say he's the best faceoff guy in the league right now?
Yeah, I would say so. He's the, him and Kelly are kind of proving the power style over the speed style. Of draws, winning it, not necessarily to themselves, but winning the draw. I mean, I don't think this stat is right, but it says that, Grenley had 0 ground balls. I'm almost positive he did not have 0 ground balls because I watched the game and he definitely had ground balls. But, they're winning it with units. They're not just winning it to themselves. Kelly likes to squirt it out and go get the ball himself and get a shot. And he's got more points than Greg on the season. But I would say it's between those two for top draw man. And, Eck tried to make his case going 20 for 30 against Rand, like we already talked about.
I guess finally, you mentioned already the getting a lot of enjoyment out of the nuances of Denver's 20-7 win over the Rattlers. I talked to Matt Strebel earlier in the week, and, basically just kind of seems like, he said that they're still kind of becoming a new team, given what they kind of lost last year in some, maybe appeared to be minor on paper pieces, guys like Roy Lang and Kevin Drew, but, ultimately provided them a lot of pop, a lot of spark, a lot of value. At the other end, it was an offensive explosion for Brennan Mundorf, Jeremy Boltz, and Chris Bocklet as they combined for 21 points. How much did the offensive nuance, how much of that was what you were referring to when you said that you enjoyed watching this game?
Probably a lot of it. I really think that Boltz and Mundorf love playing with each other. You can kind of tell. And then Bocklet's just the perfect crease monkey, Toss the ball in, he'll finish it. I think Also, their ability, their transition guys like Snyder can come down. He's dangerous, has offensive skills, not afraid to shoot. Sieverts gets up and down now, plays a little D, not too much. I think Kiminer is really, even though he only had one goal, was really instrumental in the stuff that they did, up and down through the boxes between the 2 point lines. I think that that's where they're really dominating. And this is after they cut both Steve Holmes and Eric Martin. Rada, I believe after this game, but they still not with two guys that were kind of part of their defensive unit for a long time. And I think that's very telling.
Yeah, that's significant. And it'll be very interesting to me to see how both those players respond and you know, if they find, other homes in the MLL, and then also obviously, how Denver's defense kind of, grows and flourishes and becomes, you know, kind of a new entity. I guess new relative to 2 years ago, but, you know, with Martin missing most of last season, obviously, you know, wouldn't be new. It's not that new. This is something that they dealt with last year as well. But, Kyle, you mentioned it earlier. Let's go ahead and bring on Pete Poyon. And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues with Charlotte Hounds midfielder Pete Poyon, whose Hounds suffered a disappointing, but I would imagine in a lot of ways, kind of invigorating and promising loss to the Hamilton Nationals in overtime last week. And Pete, you finished up with, you know, three goals, one of which was a 2 point goal. And, you know, it kind of seems like you guys, after making some pretty significant offseason moves, including, you know, Charlotte trading for you, are settling in a little bit, you know, particularly offensively. You had a little bit more possession this week, playing without Matt Donowski, but bringing in a rookie in Mike Sawyer. I guess just how do you characterize, the development that you guys have gone through over the first month of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're getting better every week, and that's a tough thing to do when, you know, the lineup's changing consistently, and, you know, a lot of times you don't have practice time with the whole team. So I think our attitudes are great. I think we understand this is a process. We'd like to speed the process up as much as possible, but, you know, with the guys that have been there and the attitude and the mentality that we've had, I think it is a winning one, and, you know, we haven't come up on the winning side of those games, but you know, we continue to grind out the way we have and continue to stay positive and just continue to create that chemistry. I think good things will happen down the road, and that's the mentality you have to have as a newer franchise and a group of younger players. So I think the future is bright. So, you know, you just got to continue to buy in and you know, play as a team.
Pete, one of the things I've kind of, you know, has become characteristic of your game and that I've observed is your ball carrying shooting technique, king of the whip on that stick. I mean, how did that come about? Like, you're not like the biggest guy ever. Does that really help with your power? Like, I mean, kids that string sticks are probably like sitting here going, how do I get my stick to do stuff like that? How did that come about, and how much influence has your style had on your success?
That's a very good question. How did it come about? I think it just kind of developed over the course of the years that I've played the game. You know, I just kind of enjoy having that little bit of, you know, whip, and it started out a little bit and it got more and more, but I think it's kind of surprising to some people how much there isn't as much as people think. Now, I do play with whip, but it's more of like, you know, a shallow, there's different kinds of whip in my opinion, and it's a shallow pocket with, like, you know, there is a point at which the ball is definitely going to come out. So I think it's a lot of hold. It definitely takes a unique kind of release to let the ball out of the stick, but I don't think there's as much whip as, like, there's other guys on the team that have just as much. I think that you find that surprising, and I think others would as well. But anyway, I think it does help with my style. You know, I think it's a tough release for goalies to pick up on. I think it's a lot of risk that has something to do with, you know, me playing hockey in the past. And, you know, Rich May, a former UMBC player, strung my stick once. I really liked it, adapted to it quickly, and it kind of works with my shot. Ball comes out quickly, and I continue to adapt and make changes to it depending on, you know, different kinds of styles that I want to play. So it's worked well. It's definitely a lot different than most people's sticks, and I think it has put into my style quite well. Hopefully it continues to.
Pete, I want to ask you a question about your style as well, particularly as it pertains to your role. You know, I don't remember where or when we had this conversation, but you know, I do recall you know, talking about your emergence in the league. And I think, you know, one of the things that had a lot to do with that was the type of player that you are. So, you know, this is a league that really kind of caters itself to you know, guys that can be efficient and effective as, you know, high volume midfield shooters. However, typically, you know, these guys, you know, that find success are, you know, have frames like Ben Hunt or Paul Rabels. But you have managed to, you know, really like carve out a niche as a player, kind of, you know, melding the two. You are a high volume shooter from up top, but at the same time, you know, you don't necessarily have the same you know, physical traits as, you know, some of the other guys that fill that role in the league. How do you see yourself and your game, you know, fitting into whichever team it's been that you've played on, be it Charlotte this year, Denver for the previous 2 years, or the BayHawks before that?
I think it's been, you know, I've learned to do that throughout my career, just adapt quickly to what my role is. But, you know, I think specifically with my size and my style, I think it's just been, you know, as a midfielder, you know, your job is to break down a short stick, you know, defenseman, draw a slide. They're not going to slide. You got to be able to put the ball in the back of the net. You know, I learned that at an early age and been able to have success with that. So I haven't really played and I've gotten a pull for a long time, and I've learned that with my size and, you know, I have quickness, but not necessarily straight line speed, that, you know, it's going to be tough to go against some of the best poles in the world and have success just breaking down that matchup and winning it. So you got to be able to adapt off ball and become, you know, a guy that's going to learn how to get the matchups he wants and learn how to, you know, play off ball depending on who's guarding you. So if it's, you know, a Joel White or a Brody Merrill, a guy that likes to roam a little bit, like, take advantage of that and make yourself open. Those guys are obviously unbelievable, so it's hard to take advantage of those guys. But I'm not going to square up those guys per se and dodge them. I think, you know, you play a guy that's going to have to, you know, get on your hands like Mike Simon. I think you just got to understand, you got to tuck your stick and run and, you know, tell your teammates you were looking for picks so that you can kind of switch that matchup and take advantage of a short stick. And when you do get a short stick because someone else makes the defense rotate, you have to be able to take advantage of it in different ways. And I think, you know, me being predominantly a right-handed player, you know, I've learned, you know, where to attack from and how to attack the different short sticks in the league and have success, whether that's just drawing a slide and moving the ball or, you know, getting my hands free and taking a shot, you know, that hopefully gets in the back of the net. So I think just as a player, you have to really understand what your strengths are. You have to learn how to, you know, the different ways that a team might defend you. You have to adapt your game accordingly, and I think I've done a pretty good job of that, and that's probably due to the fact that, you know, I haven't been on a team longer than 2 years since high school, so I've kind of learned that process and how to speed it up as quickly as possible. You know, you want to be a team guy. You want to make sure your teammates know that you want them to have success. You want the team to have success, and that's the most important thing, and I think that's the reason that you know, I've been able to gel quickly with the teammates that I've had over the course of the year. So it's been an interesting ride, and you know, but I've enjoyed every minute, every game. It's been a lot of fun.
Just to close up for me and to kind of build on that, you've played with some great players. You play currently with Matt Dynafsky, considered to be a very cerebral player. Brendan Mundorf, just a force of nature. You played with Kyle Dixon when you were with the BayHawks. What has playing with these players kind of taught you and helped you kind of develop as a player? And I understand you're also a coach. Like, what have you learned and brought to that side of your personal life as well?
I think they've all taught me a lot. These guys are the best players in the world. I think specifically, you know, you pick up one or two things from these best players and the things that they do well, and you know, it definitely helps me as a player, but you're not always able to adapt these things that these guys do well into your own game, but you can absolutely identify players that you're coaching and, you know, draw parallels. And when a guy here is like, hey, you play a lot like Brendan Mundorf, you should watch him, you know, you can do a lot of things that he does. I mean, that's the statement, and that's something that motivates the kid and really gets him excited to play the game. But specifically, you know, the way Kyle Dixon, you know, lets the game come to him, he does such a good job. I mean, he's a guy that can dodge every time down. But he lets the game come to him. He gets the teammates involved. He understands his strength, the shooting aspect, the, you know, not really being his ego. There is none. I mean, it's about the team. And he lets the game calm down. He takes advantage of his opportunities when he gets them. I'm very impressed. I always have been about that. Brendan Mundorf, his toughness. I mean, there's nobody tougher in the league. And just his relentlessness of just getting to the goal no matter what. And just working on his game continuously. I mean, he's the perfect player in terms of work ethic off the field and what it takes to be a great player and a great leader. You know, like, it's not often a guy in the MLL can call out other best players, you know, in the league and, you know, that play the game and have them respond. You know, Brendan's a guy in that semifinal game, he came at halftime and couldn't play and was getting in some of our faces about, you know, things we're doing. So you're never going to react negatively to Brendan. You just respect him so much that, you know, you're saying, yes, sir. You know, and that's something that you can, you know, help your players understand, and you can also, you know, try to emulate in the locker room yourself. So, you know, I don't know who else you mentioned, but these different players, you just pick up a bunch from. You know, I haven't had the opportunity to really be around Matt Danowski as much as I'd like. I'm really looking forward to that. You know, wish him the best luck this weekend and going out to the national championship. That would be an awesome moment for him and his dad to get that together, and Danowski as well. So, I think that's a guy that I'm going to learn a lot from. I just haven't had the opportunity to be around as much thus far. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity. But just everybody in this league is so talented, and, you know, they understand the game so well that you're just constantly picking up things that you can, you know, implement into your game and even more so into your coaching. So it's that's really what makes the league special in my mind.
That was a really nice rundown. I'm thinking I'm gonna have to hang out a little bit more with Kyle Dixon because the opportunity to made him sound like the man. But you mentioned something in there that I thought was really interesting, and it was that, you know, you haven't been on a team for more than 2 years, and whether it's being, you know, traded for or a part of another trade, you know, obviously all these kind of situations are very unique in their own right. But, you know, is there anything that you point to as kind of being a guy that has been on the move so much over the course of your career?
No, you know, I think there's a lot of good players who've just been on the move. I mean, you look at the guy I was traded for, Jeremy Boltis, like, he's been on three teams, and he's been in the league for a amount of time than I have. Sometimes, you know, it's just the way that these things happen. You know, I think there's always, you know, in the Denver trade, you know, they just wanted to get bigger in the midfield. They wanted a guy that was going to dodge a ball and somebody that they could probably count on a little bit more. Not that I don't think I can. I just always thought that there were better matchups on the field to kind of take advantage of. So, like, in that instance, it was a you know, tough trade. From the Bayhawks, you know, again, they just, you know, you feel like you need to fill a need in your locker room and, you know, and on the field, and you go out and you do that. So in that, in terms of, you know, being traded in the MLL, it's just been, you know, kind of, I guess, more business-type moves for the organization itself, thinking that they're going to improve themselves. So, that's all kind of just part of playing in the league. And then, you know, college-wise, I mean, those were kind of my decisions and the things that I, you know, had to do to get to where I am. So, on one hand, it's, like, unfortunate that I haven't been on, you know, a team for very long and been able to, you know, be a mainstay. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, I've played with a ton of good players and guys that really, I mean, when I was playing at Howard Community College, you told me that I was going to be playing with, you know, Max Seabold, Brendan Mundorf, you know, Kyle Dixon, you know, Danny Gladding, Ben Ruber, all these guys. I mean, I would have been like, you're crazy. There's no way. So it's certainly been an honor and a ton of fun. So it's been a blessing in disguise, and that's the way you got to look at it. If you look at it any other way, you know, it's not going to help you. So it's been fun.
All right, Pete, I think that's kind of all the time we have for you. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate the effort, and, you know, good luck in your next game. Looking great, hitting two bombs. Thanks for joining us on behalf of the MLL podcast.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, once again, we want to thank Pete Poyon for his time and joining us on the MLL podcast. A really interesting perspective. I mean, you know, Kyle, when you do take a step back and look at the wild ride that he's been on, going from – you know, Howard Community College to Ohio State to UMBC, multiple NCAA tournaments, then, you know, getting a shot in the MLL. But first, sitting basically on the sidelines for a season, and then breaking through, I believe, two games left in his first season, and then, you know, obviously having bounced around the league a little bit, now settling with the Charlotte Hounds, who knows? You know, they certainly have a lot of talent on the roster, and it's a matter of kind of coming together the right way, and they could turn into a team that makes a run at something.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of talked about it a little bit in my column this week. Statistically, the Hounds are top three, top five in pretty much every category. It's just a matter of losing close games. I guess you could say luck, execution, however you want to describe it. But, you know, that team is not worthy of its record of 1-3. And I think that they will improve and come back to the pack, and they've got a better chance than some other teams like Rochester with the same record and Ohio with a worse record.
Well, so we're going to move on and talk about, you know, what's ahead for the MLL. And for this week, that means, as you mentioned earlier, we've got one game on Thursday nighter. Ohio and Hamilton, who have only played three games on the season, getting back to level in terms of the number of games played with the rest of the league. The break is the result of the NCAA championships, obviously, kind of consuming the spotlight, rightfully so, in Philadelphia, both D1, D2, D3 men's, and the D1 women's championship, which will be at Villanova. And you and I will actually be together covering that event, which we're both looking forward to. But in the meantime, the Machine are looking for their first win and looking to hand the Nationals their first loss. As I mentioned, you know, a lot of rookies making a debut for Ohio. You ran through them earlier. One rookie, however, will not be making a debut, and that is the number one overall draft pick, Peter Baum, who yesterday the Ohio Machine included in a release would not be playing MLL this season. And then last night, adrenaline in conjunction with the LXM Pro Tour released that he would be hired as a full-time adrenaline employee and be playing on the LXM Pro Tour. He's scheduled to play in the USILA North-South game on Friday, and then in the LXM event on June 8th. And, you know, Kyle, this is obviously a sensitive issue for the league. You know, this particular story has a little bit of, I want to say, hearsay and conjecture, a little bit of confusion attached to it because, you know, of the reasons prescribed for, you know, doing one or not doing the other. And kind of all of that is a little bit beside the point, particularly because, you know, what the truth actually is, you know, kind of hasn't been clarified as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I think it's still worth talking about, at least in some regard, on this podcast because, you know, when the number one draft pick decides for whatever reason not to participate in the league, and we've seen this in the past with, you know, guys like Shamel and Ramel Bratton, you know, Brandon Korp, who decided to join the LXM Tour after, you know, playing a few games in the MLL his rookie season. You know, it has an impact, and, you know, you've been pretty vocal and outspoken about it. What essentially is your view on what the impact of some of the best players not playing in the MLL is on the league?
I think in this instance, just purely as someone that covers the MLL. I don't cover much of anything else. I cover a little NCAA, depending, live blog games. I'll make jokes. I tweet about stuff. It happens. I think in this instance, the MLL comes off looking not great just because, you know, it's the number one pick. I mean, regardless of who it is, regardless of what they do, the number one pick isn't playing. And I think that when you look at that on the surface and someone that maybe isn't an MLL fan and comes from another sporting background and sees the draft, like, oh yeah, they look bomb up and like, oh yeah, he won the tour. Oh yeah, he has a lot of points. And then they're like, well, where is he? Well, he's not playing. Why? And then someone tries to explain it to them because they're not familiar with the sport. They don't get it. You know, I think that when that happens, it looks bad. And regardless of choice or blame or all that other stuff, I mean, let's not begrudge someone to make a full-time living. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of that going around. And I think that people kind of think I'm leading that charge. There's no way I'm leading that charge. You know what I mean? Personally, I toiled as an assistant coach for 8 years, you know, before I was even made a full-time employee or even considered to be one. You know, it's a hard life to try and make your bones in the cross. I mean, there's not the most opportunities. You know, it's not football, it's not baseball, it's not even hockey. You know, there aren't that many positions out there, and there are a lot of people competing because a lot of people do love lacrosse. So, you know, when something comes up like this and you're forced to make a choice between getting paid on a per game status or getting paid, you know, every week like everyone else, it's kind of a no-brainer when you look at from his perspective. And I don't actually blame him for anything personally. I think the way that it was handled was poor by, in my opinion, both sides. Although I think releasing a press release at 10:30 p.m. at night is not the greatest look. I don't think it's a good look. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to go into any more detail. Not a good look. But I think going forward, I think this will happen. It's obviously going to happen again. It already happened. It's not the first time this has happened. You said that yourself. So I think, you know, if we look at it as an isolated incident or we look at it as a coup for adrenaline, either way, I don't think it looks great for the league, but I also don't think it's a killer either, you know. So you got to look at it from both sides. Look at it from, you know, Baum's side. He made a choice that is the best for him in his mind for his future, and that's fine.
I think that's really well said. That's the thing that kind of irks me the most is, you know, any type of soapbox standing trying to tell somebody else how to live their life is something that doesn't really resonate with me. You know, I'm a sports fan, and I understand, you know, the emotions that can be attached to it, but it's rare. I wouldn't say that I've never done it, but it's very rare. You know, and I'm a Cleveland sports fan, so, you know, I lived this when LeBron James decided that he was going to go to Miami. And at that time, I think that there are some, you know, very slight similarities in the situation insofar as I think that there are a lot of people that criticize the decision, not the decision, the show. Criticize his choice to go to Miami, or at least wanted to, but knew that they couldn't because that's a little irrational. So instead they decided to criticize the manner in which he went about it, because it was a little bit easier, a little bit more palatable. But really, they wanted to criticize the decision in the first place. I kind of feel the same way about Pete. You know, I think that the speculation that really dragged on, you know, primarily because it was attached as this being a possibility so early. You know, ultimately, the kid, and he told me this when I talked to him in you know, either January or February, that he wasn't going to make a decision until after this season. So, you know, a lot of the conversations that happened prior to that, I think, you know, whether or not he had made a decision, as long as he, you know, kind of didn't make it public or whatever, you know, and then he kind of, it seems like in his public comments, waffled a little bit. I guess it's just, you know, to a degree, I think all around, you know, what most people would agree is that it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation based on how it played out. But, you know, the fact is, whether it's, you know, inside lacrosse or an immediate entity that asked him what his plans were, or, you know, him for answering, or, you know, the MLL for drafting him, whatever. None of these choices were really the wrong choice. It's just, it is what it is. And here we are, and, you know, the MLL as the league will move forward, and that's kind of the way it'll go.
Yeah, and, you know, to clarify too, like, I've met him. I've interviewed him. I was there at the when Colgate beat UMass. I covered that game. He seems like a humble, like, nice kid. You know, I think that can't be stated enough. I don't think there's any villainy on his part. So I think people need to relax with that kind of stuff. You know, and I think that, you know, to quote all of my haters, stay positive. I tried to stay positive. I made a tweet about it. I said, listen, you can say whatever you want, but the people that play in the MLL, the players that play in the MLL are Warriors. And to me, that's all that matters, and that's true. That doesn't mean people that play elsewhere aren't, but it means that the people in the MLL are. And I think that should be, you know, part of this discussion too. If you're going to throw in, well, the MLL is Bush League, they don't pay them enough, blah, blah, blah. I mean, okay. But, you know, those players play hard every time. And I've never seen that other organization. I've never seen one of those games, so I don't know that. But I know the MLL guys do. So that's just my last kind of statement on it. And like I said, I don't think there's any villainy. I think that it's possible that everyone's telling the truth, and then there's some half-truths in there. So we'll see. I think that, you know, for now it's done. Ohio's going to move on. The league's going to move on. Baum's going to move on. And hopefully everybody's happy going forward.
And Ohio moves on quickly as they go for a win tonight against the Nationals. You know, whether it be Marcus Holman, Logan Shaw, Dominique Alexander, the fact of the matter is that this is a league, you know, it's a team that not only needs some offensive pop in terms of personnel, they need a little bit more in terms of a plan. when you inject, you know, three new faces, it's unlikely that the plan's going to be any better honed. What are you looking to see out of the machine tonight as they go for their first win?
I think they need to feed their new guys the ball and see what they can do. Have steel play acts, distribute, you know, Holman and Schuss, let them operate. You know, that's what you got to do because no one else has done enough. You need assisted goals. You need to move the ball. You need to get good looks at Cage. They're going to miss Greg Bice, who has a broken foot, will not be in this game. So I think they're going to grab a surprise pull and play him there. I did talk to GM John Algy today, a little bit off the record, on the record, on and off about a lot of stuff. And, you know, I think that their attitude is we have all these guys that are first-year guys and second-year guys, and they're finally going to be together. And is it going to take time? Sure. But they're excited about the prospects and if those guys gel. I hope they do. I hope that, you know, Steele and Holman have a great rapport. Schuss gets his sweeps from the top to the left and gets some good shots. And I think that they're going to look good. I think the problem is they're running into a Hamilton team that's gigantic. You know, we talked on the conference call with Huntley and Garber. And, you know, one of the things I asked Garber was, you know, how are you going to get around guys this big that slide and protect the middle so well? That's the thing that Hamilton does. That's how Hamilton's won. They protect the middle. Teams have to shoot on angles to beat them. They have to get, you know, above GLE and pass the 5-and-5. They can't get past the 5-and-5 against Hamilton. They're too strong. Poles are too strong. Tucker Durkin played his first game last week, looked really good. Reed Acton looked pretty good. And you got Lovejoy just kind of throwing an extra bow every time he can. They got a lot of toughness. And they got a lot of big, tough Canadians that can finish the ball. So how you beat a team like that? You know, I don't know if you beat them with finesse. I think that's one of the only options you have. But you also have to be smart. And Ohio hasn't played smart for three games. So it doesn't look great for them. But if they combine, you know, the efforts of their rookies with, you know, some coaching and some, you know, patience, I think that, you know, this could be a trap game for Hamilton.
And also for Hamilton, it is a debut for Josh Hawkins, which means that I'm going to do everything I can to watch it because he's one of my favorite players.
Yeah, he's definitely fun to watch. I think the last image that everyone has of him, the elation of stealing that ball away in the Duke game and then the horror of it flying out of his stick is not what people want to remember him for. He's an exciting player. He's so exciting. The league sent out its own release about him actually being activated, which to my knowledge, they have not done at all for any other player anytime soon that wasn't like a number one pick. But, you know, we'll see what he does. It's not like he's a huge goal scorer. He's a hustler and he's smart and he plays tough. And that goes a long way in the MLL. I think that's what we've established, especially this year, but the last couple of years. And, you know, as relationships grow with coaches and players, I think that the one thing people keep talking about is toughness and guys that are tough stay in the league. Guys that aren't tough play a couple years and leave, you know, and I think that Hawkins could be in the league for a long time because he's a tough dude and he plays hard.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, that'll do it for this week's Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast. Thank you, as always, for joining me. It was a good one. Thank you again to Pete Poyon. And for all you MLL fans, enjoy Hamilton, Ohio tonight, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Shout out.
I'm going to make it my thing that I'm going to forget the shout out every week.
Yeah, I think that's kind of your thing. That is kind of your thing. Shout out to the Tweet Fam who came up big and had some good discussions about this bomb thing. Didn't get too heated. I didn't get too heated, although I had to type some stuff out and then delete it, put it in the rage journal. But you know, I think that the cross community as a whole has been a little rational, but also a little irrational. The people that follow me are somewhat more rational. So thanks a lot, guys. Great discussion. Can't wait for the league to come back and watch Ohio Hamilton tonight on CBS Sportsnet.
You like jumped me for a shout out, and then you gave a shout out to all of your Twitter followers.
Yeah.
All right, that's specious. But Kyle, as always, it was a good one. We'll catch you next time.
All right, man. See ya.